Most of our work on this Earthwatch expedition was in the lush and cool forest, where we intended to camp for 5 nights. Our group of 7 volunteers and assorted scientists arrived at the campsite in the early afternoon, just as the sky was turning from blue with assorted clouds to dark rain clouds. We were near the beautiful Robalo River in the forest of 3 southern beech or Nothofagus species, Koiwe, Lenga, and Nire. The roar of the river was always with us as we each chose a spot to pitch a tent in this gentle forest. A light rain was falling as we hurriedly set up our tents. Mine was a lightweight bivouac-style tent which had not been tested beyond my living room at home in Santa Cruz. The absurdity of the moment is captured by the memory of me, the picture of a green camper in this Magellanic southern corner of the world, reading the instructions for the tent assembly as rain began to threaten the entire effort. Finally, with tents secured and a campfire blazing, we cooked spaghetti for 10 in a big pot on the camp grill. The rain tested our ability to prepare a meal. Since most of us had already spent much energy on the hike to the campsite, the rain and cold were draining our energy further. Then, in an attempt to get more water from the river, I slipped and tumbled down a 10-foot muddy embankment. Fortunately, my pride was more injured than my body. With the temperature dropping, the rain was turning to sleet and snow. So it was a big relief to crawl into my little tent under a large lenga tree and wiggle into a warm sleeping bag. It was wet and cold outside, but I was able to stay quite comfortable on my air mattress. But 3 hours later, I awoke feeling some anxiety. I know that there are no animals, snakes, or insects to fear in this gentle country. My heartbeat seemed normal, but I couldn't take a deep breath. This must be claustrophobia. I was freaking out in this life-saving but tiny tent at the bottom of the world. Later that night, I emerged from the tent to relieve myself. One step out of the tent, and I slipped on a tree root, and my face meets the forest floor. Did I make the right decision to come here? Next day, as we were sitting around the campfire drinking coffee, I recount the mishaps of the night before. Pancha has been working with the grandmothers in the nearby Yagan village, recording their language and stories. She tells us that the grandmothers say that on the first night of sleeping near the river spirits like to come to the camp and tease the newcomer. Ah, that would explain my first night in the forest. After a quick breakfast, we set out for our first day in the field, full of enthusiasm, though already tired from a difficult night of cold and wet weather. So we donned rain gear and headed over a small mountain to some research sites on the Robalo River. There was no trail, I discovered as I slid over another muddy log or slipped in a bog. My job that day was to set mouse traps in the forest near the river. For bait, we used raw oatmeal. I also set insect traps. Others were setting mist nets to capture birds to weigh and band. It was raining, but once again, as we experienced yesterday, the rain soon turned to sleet, and finally big gobs of snowflakes were falling all around. Soon the hillside was covered with white. The snow grew more intense as the day went on, and it became difficult to step over the bogs, as snow covered just about everything in sight. So I was relieved to hear that we would head back to town to dry out and get a good night's sleep. The town of Puerto Williams is only 3 kilometers away, and we could easily return there to recover. We would leave our tents exposed to the storm. So here we are, 2 days later, returning to the forest camp. The weather has improved considerably. Most of the snow has melted. Some from our group returned yesterday to clear the snow off our tents. All the tents remained intact and undamaged.
And here we've arrived at camp. It's a wet day, but the rain has stopped.
They were finding lots of insects.
As soon as there is sun, I mean, it was just like everything was coming to life. Like the condor was taking the thermo, you know. It was,
barely on the other side of the thermo. On the other side of the dam, there's still snow. So when we were, it was still ankle-deep snow.
Yeah.
And as we were coming down, there were flocks of sparrows eating all around in the snow. And we saw mink tracks all over the place. Oh, so the mink, unfortunately, has made it all the way up the valley.
We also ate heard parakeets.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't see them.
No, we didn't see them.
We just heard
and
them.
Black face ibis.
Uh-huh, the bandurria.
And the other geese also at the bottom, which were so pretty.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
It was actually really pretty walking in the snow today because it was dry snow. It was powder snow. And so we didn't get wet. We just walked through the snow.
Oh, good.
And it was, you know, just felt like Christmas in the U.S. or something.
And here was my dear mini tent. Can I spend another night in the forest? Will the spirits leave me alone tonight? After a good night's sleep in my little tent, it's a beautiful morning. It's dry, no rain, no snow, and in contrast to that first night in the forest, no teasing river spirits visited me last night. Today there's time to do our work and for me to get better acquainted with some very interesting people. One of those is Chilean scientist Francisca Massardo, who goes by the nickname Pancha.
I have been here in the Navarino Island since 2000, January 2000, and I came before, but just to have a look of the island. But working since 2000, and my background is simple. I am agronomist, and then I did a master degree and a PhD degree in plant physiology. So I was a laboratory person. But in 1997, I thought that I like the forest, I like the nature. So what could I do to work with them, not only with plants, not only with pure science? So I decided to left my job at this point, that was the university. I was a university professor, and I went to the States, to United States, and I did a postdoctoral fellowship with Dr. Gregory Anderson at University of Connecticut, and I was there 5 years working with different perspectives about nature from different groups of people. And I am here working now with Jagan people because it was my interest since long before. And I could say that it has been very rewarding from many, many different points of view.
Who are the Jagan people here in Navarino Island?
They have, I think, a story like many other indigenous groups colonized.
Dr. Massardo told me that the Jagan are an ethnic group that arrived in this area about 7,000 years ago. They lived a nomadic life, traveling by canoe from Tierra del Fuego south to Cape Horn Island. There were probably not more than 3,000 people at any one time, and they lived in their traditional way until about 150 years ago. Today there are about 70 descendants living on Navarino Island, marginalized from Chilean society, making traditional handicrafts to sell to the few tourists who visit the island. Only one full-blooded Jagan remains, the last to speak the language. Though they no longer travel by canoe, Pancha tells me that they still keep some beautiful and wonderful traditions in harmony with their environment. Pancha, you've been working with the Jagan people during your stay here, and of course now you live most of the year here on the island. Tell us about your work with the grandmothers and the other people here in the community.
I'm working mostly in, I think, language issues. I am interested in what are the perspectives about nature from all these old people and young people. Old people because I'm interested how they looked at the forest, how they feel, how they miss from older times related to our times, and how much of this traditional knowledge is in young people. More or less, I think this is a very short resume about my work here, and it has been very rewarding in many senses. First, because I didn't know the deep knowledge of old people have about the forest, about the sea, the ocean, about the animals, how they live with them. I would say that I'm working with people that is about 70 or 80 years old, So they were not canoe people completely, but they had the experience for navigation in little ships. And they, I think, had some of the traditional old knowledge from their parents or their families. So I think they looked at nature in very different ways than our people and in contemporary time.
Hospul pich kamenet kamenat yar honche malatra kit kawimanat.
My grandfather told us that the Ashpul bird was a signal of bad fate. If we saw him, we should not throw rocks at him. If we did, he could bring rain, thunder, and snow. My brothers didn't believe grandfather, and they threw rocks at the Ashpul bird to see what would happen. Soon the bad weather began. It came with rain and thunder. Wow, they said. It's true what grandfather told us. We'll never do that again. Later, my mother confirmed, when grandfather says something, we must obey him, because he knows, and it is truly bad to throw stones at the Ashpul bird.
But